children. Hi, and welcome to Cartwheels on the Sky, a brand new 30-minute poetry show on KGUA FM Gualala. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and for the next 13 weeks, you will get an intimate look into the mind and process of a poet. Tonight's feature is the fantastic fork rag poet and dear friend, Toni Birnbaum. Toni declares herself a bandit of a poet, stealing the right to claim herself worthy of giving readings, accepting the blessing of being born with a poet soul. She embraces Mary Oliver as she proclaims herself to just let the soft fur of her body love what it loves. Without a writing degree or teaching credit or long list of publications, not even a chapbook, she shares that her love of language, the element of surprise and self-discovery, and the timelessness of writing and its revelations are what drives her credentials. She has been fortunate over the years to study ways to ride the muse in workshops with Dorian Lux, Joe Millar, Ellen Bass, and Marie Howe, so she knows a good horse when she sees one. She has sometimes seen her words on the page, such as in an obscure journal in North Carolina, a shamanic publication called Sacred Reflections, and she had a poem published in the online New Millennium Writings that garnered her an honorable mention. Her work has also been read by poets performing in the traveling poetry show Rumi's Caravan. She has been honored to be a featured reader around Mendocino County, and she especially enjoys offering her poems at a yearly event, Kaleidoscope, sponsored by Spirit House Center for Healing in Fort Bragg, a nonprofit she facilitates and founded with her partner Rhonda Doe. Spirit House is where most of her creativity is expressed in dedicating herself to healing and providing those who are drawn there to a wider access to the wisdom within their own hearts.
Toni Birnbaum, welcome to Cartwheels on the Sky. I am so happy to have you here with me right now.
I'm so happy to be here.
Do you want to start us off with a poem?
Here it comes. It's called The 8 o'clock Howl. Soon we will hear it, rolling into our front yard like a bowling ball, a distant thunder parading through a vacant city, awakened like a warning, an invitation to stop. Quench the tongue of silence. Let the swell of lockdown fill our mouths and echo high from the sacred spires. Wave the hand-swinging bell of the town crier. Announce the mighty call, predicted yet unexpected, the 8 o'clock howl. The door jams will open, the windows unlock, and we'll ready ourselves for the scream and the shout. Ignite and awaken the dog street choir. Unshackle the cuffs on those pent-up desires. Give voice to the frenzy. Unleash the monkey. Vent the frustration. Free the proclamation. Join Paul Revere on his ride. We howl for house workers. Can you hear us? Our voice is an opera of thanks. We are howling with love for the lungs that are lunging, for the dying, the sick, the hurting and hungry, howling with happiness for the tireless helpers, for the holy, the lonely, the fearless first responders, and we roar with anger, terror, and grief, then blow the conch for its comic relief. We howl with gratitude and fear, join the cries of the helpless, we remember you here. We wail for redemption, freedom, justice, and truth, for the planet, our families, the evolution of peace. We howl together to hear ourselves howl, to know we are howling for the sake of the howl, to join, to sing, to love, to scream, to hear the voice of our neighbors blending as one to howl, because we still can. Thank you. Ow!
Don't you just want to?
I don't know about you, but we have a neighborhood that is into the howl, and it still goes on. And it's quite amazing to be participating in this ritual of the day in the neighborhood. Very cool.
So that really does happen? People stand outside their doors and someone starts howling and then everyone howls together?
Then everybody howls and you can hear it sort of peal, you know?
Oh.
And up in the hills a little bit, in the back, you'll hear people. And the howl is, you know, it is such a range from despair and anger. I think people are using it to vent.
Yeah.
But it's also beautiful. I mean, people get, you know, sometimes they get big cymbals and drums out. Well, I think it started, you know, in Italy when people were singing operas and the national anthem,
right.
You know, and then it just started in this neighborhood. Of course, Ron is one of the instigators. Ron is my partner for those on the radio show. And
that's Ron Nadeau.
Uh-huh. Ron Nadeau of Spirit House loves to get out there and start the howl. So it's a very unusual thing. Yeah, very timely.
And how many people would you say participate in that?
Well, I think maybe as many as 10 households.
Mm-hmm.
What's really fun is when we get the dogs going.
Yeah.
It's certainly a time that we're in, and a lot to discover right now about ourselves and a lot to write about as poets.
Do you find that you're writing a lot of poetry right now about COVID and about the time? Do you find yourself feeling inspired?
You know, what I'm doing a lot these days, it feels like, is pulling out some old poems and doing some revision from the perspective of where I am now.
Right.
There's two new poems that have come actually since COVID. They're not necessarily about COVID, but they're a little bit on the darker side. And
yeah.
And I think that that's the influence of that.
It's one of those dances that those of us who are writers or poets or speakers and communicators, our job is to communicate that soul world or the deeper unexpressed emotion and bring all of that through. You can reflect pure light, but the pure light really is that balance between the light and the dark. So it's to make a poem really work. Got to have dark in it. You can't just float around in the light because it doesn't ground with what we're experiencing here on Earth, and you've got to find that, you know, that tunnel that you birth through, but you need some of that angst and pathos to pull it out of this, I just drank this really sweet, sugary cola, you know, put it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that that's one of the reasons writing is so beneficial, because it does force the writer, if the writer's open to that, to broaden the perspective to include both. Because I feel like it's through the tension of allowing both that a third thing then can appear. And that's the discovery and the surprise mm-hmm. that a poet allows him or herself to sit down and be a part of, to bring forth the conflict or the both sides and say, okay, here it is. You figure it out. You know?
Right.
Let that the poem find its own resolve, and to be able to get out of the way enough to let that discovery happen and to be in the surprise of that, I think is the real juicy reward, you know, that poets get. And the reader also. And I think it's challenging also to pull it off.
Does poetry come naturally to you?
Sometimes a poem will just come through, and I don't even really understand where, how, what, but it just comes through, and it's pretty much seals the deal. I'll work with it a little bit if necessary. And then there are other poems that come through, and they really need a lot of work. They can tend to be a little too light, lopsided, because I'm all about redemption, I'm all about healing, I really like to find the resolution, I love the happy ending, you know.
Right.
And so there's a I always have to keep that watchful eye, you know, that it's not preachy and that I'm not trying to push an outcome that's the happy ending. And so for me, sometimes just what you were talking about, that balance between the dark and the light is something that I have to work at.
How about one more poem?
Why not? Let me see if I can find one that maybe holds the balance that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping for.
Well, I have a poem called When Darkness Turns Light. It's what I haven't written that's left its mark on me. Spending most of the pages of my life writing around it, unable to touch it directly. How does one speak of the primal pain coded in one's mythic legacy? Everyone carries their own perfect cross. Each of us curls like a tree around a fence, taking on our own unique shape, forged by the obstacles we're given. Perhaps like me, you tried to hide in the locker room, or in the closet of intelligence, or pretend the pain away with humor, distract it with accomplishments or beauty, bury it in addiction, or bypass it with spiritual attunement. We can live with our secret for as long as love will allow, until someone comes along and listens, holds you while you rock and cry and tell your story, traces their finger along the border of your wound, calls it the name of a sacred site you've never heard of, releasing its power to free you. And like a photo in a solution under a black light in a dark room, you begin to emerge, astonished at the recognition of your beauty, glimpsing the picture of the face you had before you were born. See yourself everywhere shining, and everywhere yourself shining back.
Wonderful example of that balance. It's not the beauty, it's the hiding. Mm-hmm. And that's just really so well said.
Yes.
So let's talk a bit about you, who you are, and how poetry expresses itself in your life.
Well, I was writing poetry as a young child. You know, I was very enchanted by rhyme and the use of words, and I really loved it, loved writing, and wrote a lot. And then when I went to college, I began to notice that what I was really writing were what a friend of mine passed off, who I consider to be a really good poet. He called them diary poems, which I think is exactly what they were. They were, you know, things that I wrote to express what I was going through, different
right.
emotions. So some of them were filled with poor, pitiful Pearl standpoints.
And, yeah.
You know, they were diary poems, and they weren't necessarily poems that you would want to be putting out into the world that had a merit of actually being able to bring beauty, being able to bring a deeper understanding, or have a power to transform someone, you know, who reads the poem.
Right.
And who's really interested and who's drawn into something that perhaps wouldn't draw them, and yet there's a recognition. And I think that that takes a lot of skill. So I burned all my poems when I was in college, and I said, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. And then slowly, you know, said, hey, you can't stop writing, so why not get better at it? So I started taking writing workshops and working with wonderful poets who were local. I lived in Marin at the time, and Dorian Locks was there, and Joe Millar was in that class, and also some excellent poets. So I think really anything you focus on that you love, you can get better at. And so that was sort of the evolution of my writing. And then, sure enough, as one thing led to another, I went off to these week-long, incredible workshops, one down at Esalen with Ellen Bass. So I've been really in the company of beautiful poets who also share, of course, the work of poets they love. And it just, as the whole horizon widens and one sees the scope of what's out there, it's very inspiring and encouraging. Now, being here, I moved up here about 15 years ago. I've had a little bit more time to craft and work on poetry, and then I met you, and
we met right away.
We did, and we did the poetry at the hotel.
That was at the Voices and Vision at the Mendocino Hotel, that project.
Yeah, right.
Well, that was something I wanted you to talk about, because often you collaborate with sound, healing, and music, and your poetry, reading with live musicians.
And of course, Ron, my partner, being a musician, he always wanted to encourage me to add music. And, you know, in the beautiful way that you've been running that series also, with the musicians and the poets showing up, what a treat. And it's such a miracle, really, when you witness that, because nobody's rehearsing.
Yeah.
Right? It's just the moment and the spark and the deeper listening that happens when the musicians are listening and the poets reading, but also listening, so the voice and the music are really joined together in some great support of each other. It's very cool.
Well, that's one of the things I think that is so amazing about Third Thursday Poetry, which we're doing it on the third Thursday via Zoom. And if anyone's listening and they want to be part of that, you can send me an email at bmore@mcn.org. But the musicians, you know, James Hayes has been a real instigator and a presence there, and Jesse Hanna, and then also Chris Doring, and then also Tim Mueller. Sometimes we get Carl Jung, and then when Book is in town, and then Nelson Lending might come in and play piano. So you kind of really never know who's going to show up, but you know you're going to have your core, which is James, Jesse, Chris Doring, and Tim Mueller.
I'm just going to take a quick moment and let you know you're listening to Cartwheels on the Sky. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and I'm speaking with Tony Birnbaum.
I often have poets who've never read with live music before, and they try to back out of it. And I said, well, when I invited you to this reading, this is this reading. It's great because always, not one time, have I had a poet say, oh, that was horrible, I did terrible. They're just glowing when they're done, and they're like, I had no idea it would be so easy, and they listen, and they're so present, and the music, it feels good because we're so connected between the two.
I have so many poems that include this idea of music. You know, one was when I was driving to Esalen for a writing workshop, actually, and I was listening to music through the CD of these monks chanting, and it absolutely transported me. Anyway, so I'll read this one, Driving to Esalen, because it's so fun to read, and it really speaks to that transforming energy of music. Driving to Esalen. These eucalyptus, backs peeling in the sun, grow from the mouths of Tibetan monks chanting through the speakers, bowing to the rhythm of the rolling tires, clumping, clumping with the sway and dip of this old coast road, rising up like seed syllables swollen with light, breaking the sound barrier. The world quiets to stillness, radiance, and breath. Hold steady the wheel, velocity and vibration. Hold steady the hand of this dream queen, surrender to this movement steering my life as I let go, as I let go. Into a windshield churning with ocean and sky, a synchronized, astonished meadow, everything painted with one brush stroke. Hold steady this gaze, hold steady my heart as I disappear along the highway, inclined on a barrier at the end of the world. Branches swaying, monks praying, car careening, heart beating. My hair is flying in the wild wind. Tears are flowing for no other reason, for no other reason than this, and whatever waits around the bend.
I'm snapping my fingers through the phone.
Yeah. You know, driving in our car with the speakers on and the music is high, and, you know, it's such freedom.
Being the music and blending with the music and how the music will take you through all of those places, and then how cosmic the music is. So I really, really relate to that. That was a beautiful poem.
That's fun.
For those of us who drive and use driving as a time for contemplation and meditation, you know, you have to be careful because you have to 100% stay present.
Really, it comes with a warning.
Yes. So I'm going to ask you this. The music that you do with Ron, and you do readings at Spirit House fairly...
Right.
I mean, you did before COVID, but you have done even something with COVID that you did a Zoom version, if I remember correctly.
We did.
And,
we did.
And so talk a little bit about that process that you go through.
Yeah. It's, you know, the genesis of this yearly event, it's called Kaleidoscope. We've been doing it now, I think this was the sixth year when we Zoomed it this last year. It came out of an event called Pie, Poetry, and Port, which I sponsored here in the yurt because I had written a long series of poems about my mother after she died. And I didn't have a great relationship with my mother, so there was a lot of working out of stuff in these poems. And they really needed and wanted to be witnessed. They needed an audience. It was sort of like part of my therapy. And
right.
I invited everyone to come and celebrate mothers and bring poems about mothers. So from that, a friend of mine, Lauren Brown, who's an amazing songwriter and singer, was working on her first album. And through that relationship, I thought, hey, let's showcase Lauren to come and perform in Spirit House and do her new CD, music from her new CD. So I said, you do the music and I'll read a couple poems. And we'll dedicate it to mothers and we'll do it around Mother's Day and Mother Earth. And she said, okay. So we had the limitation of, okay, let's try to find poems about mothers, mothering, Mother Earth.
Mm.
That are going to support each other in a weave. So we did have some restrictions. It's almost like, okay, here's a haiku, you know, and within this
right.
form, what can you come up with? And so it was a collaboration, and we were able to set it up with a loose framework and then leave a lot of room open for spontaneity and, of course, whatever wants to enter the room. We set it up. We created a container. We built intention. We brought in the directions, you know, very shamanic according to my sensibility, and created the space. And it was very well received. And so as the years went on, we continued with that framework. And so it was really a back and forth. She'd sing a song, I'd read a poem or two, she'd sing a song or two. And it worked really beautifully. And when we Zoomed it, we did the same thing. She was on location in the Sebastopol area where she lives.
Right.
And we set it up here.
And how did it go with Zoom?
I was shocked at how well it went. I was really a little concerned because all the previous evenings were set in Spirit House, and most, I'm sure, your audience has not been to Spirit House, but it is an underground ceremonial center that can hold up to about 100 people if we're in there like sardines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the candlelit walls, and it has an ambiance. We do ceremonies there. It has a vibe that really does a lot of the work of transporting people and just creates that to help whatever goes on in there to be more transcending. So we didn't have that. We set the camera up here in our living room in front of the altar, which is a very sacred space, and
absolutely.
That read through, so that was great. But we had twice as many people attend as usual because they could just tune in from their living room. And we got some great feedback and felt great about it. It was sort of my mindset that you need the audience, the energy created between the performer and the audience
right.
is what makes it all juicy and happen, but it happened.
It happened anyway. We're getting close to time, and I would
okay.
like to make sure that you tell listeners how to find out more about you and your poetry.
Good question, Blake. When I figure out the answer, I'll let you know. I don't have a website. I'm not an ambitious poet in terms of wanting to be published, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't seem to be able to put the time it takes, you know, to the top of the list to get that chapbook out there and to put it online or to get it published.
You do have work that's available, right? There's places
yeah.
people can read your poetry.
Okay, there's a spirithousehealing.org. And if there's a poetry event coming up, it'll be listed there on the calendar. Yeah, thank you.
Well,
for
why don't you take us out with a poem?
Okay, let's see. How do we end this? Well, since I've been so much into gardening, I'm going to read this last poem then called Mantra. The old woman in my dream has a thin silver braid falling from a tattered straw hat. Purple veins emboss her. She is on her knees, a still life in the bed of her winter garden, cool and gray, ankles swollen with untold stories of the miles she's walked for love. She is about to bury the well-sorted seeds of the high-bred moments once more, knowing the harvest will come with or without her, no more flowers to arrange. She will miss the beans to shuck, garlic to peel, but she plants anyway, to bless her hands and the earth with a natural devotion. Mantra sings eternal life into her renewable heart, even as her body withers and her wrinkled face smiles for no reason, even as the sounds mean little to her mind and her vision is distorted. She hums the mantra all her life. Unable to speak what she knows, she hums without ceasing the song from her grandmother's grave, a melody of cypress branches swaying inside her. Over and over, each drift of her trowel digs deeper, its discerning blade parting the ground for the next generation. Her humming, louder now, gives birth once more, a woman's primal bliss when the song she came to sing sings through her like an orgasm when she dies. This is the sound of the sun coming home before its final breath. The last precious gift of living rises up the green stalk of her spine into the will of God. Aham Prima, Aham Prima, Shanti, Shanti, Om. This slow humming knows all things, knows not time, swarms like bees, an infinite hive, spins like a planet, mantra, mudra, her song in my throat, stillness, silence, emptiness, union, sound.
Toni Birnbaum.
Thanks,
Thank
Blake.
You.
Thank you for listening to Cartwheels on the Sky. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and you've been listening to Toni Birnbaum and myself in conversation about poetry, poems, and discovery. Stay tuned, and next week I'll be back with Roberta Warndinger, the current Poet Laureate of Ukiah. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful night. Oh, yeah, you got a-